welcome to our broadcast. Our job seeker our topic is transitioning from a for-profit employer to a non-profit employer. And say, are you feeling down because of no employer responses? Have you recently thought you had the job and then were turned down? Or maybe your resume is just not getting the results you wanted. Perhaps you've been looking for work for a long time and you're ready to take just about anything. Well, if these are your feelings, I'm glad you turned in to today's broadcast, and I hope our show will give you an edge for your job search and maybe, just maybe, help you land that special position. You can join our show's discussion by emailing me directly your job seeker questions at jobseeker@idacgroup.com. Today for our show, I'm joined by a special guest, co-host Tom Board out of Denver, Colorado. Tom is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website, and you can see Tom's picture and bio. Just click preferred counselors on our toolbar. Tom, hello. How are things in Denver?
Well, we're doing fine here in Denver. It's a sunny day.
Well, excellent, excellent. Tom has been assisting men and women with their career advancement since 1990, and that's over 23 years. He has a master's degree in counseling, and he oversees his private counseling practice in the Denver area. Since 1990, Tom has completed over 2,500 career advancement assessments using the IDEC CareerMatch system. Tom holds the record for the largest number of individual CareerMatch assessments completed nationwide. And my hat's off to you, Tom.
Yeah, that's quite a wonderful kind of honor to have, I think.
Yeah. Well, you probably got a lot of miles there to talk about. For the first 15 minutes of our show, Tom and I will talk about our topic, how to make the transition from the for-profit community to the non-for-profit community, and then we'll take a short break and begin to answer your job hunting questions. So, Tom, let's get into our topic, and what I'd like to do is define what we're talking about.
Okay.
The topic actually comes from many, many years of counseling individuals that are wanting to make career change, and noticing there really is a major, major culture change when a person has been employed for years in the for-profit sector and is now thinking of changing into the nonprofit sector. And I would say if there's one group of job seekers that tends to do this the most, it's the boomers, those that are 55 and older, and maybe they're financially fairly well established, they've got their retirement nest egg, and now they want to give back. And so they're looking in the nonprofit sector. So what does nonprofit mean? Well, it could be educational organizations. It could be community service organizations. It could be international assistance organizations. It could be churches. It could be ministry service groups, all the above. And there are many, many, many thousands and thousands of these all over. This is not government service. This is nonprofit, and that means they certainly can charge for their services. However, most or a big bulk of their income comes from donations, contributions, foundations, and grants, and that's a little bit of the culture shift. So given that definition, Tom, before we jump into comments, let me illustrate. I'm thinking of Ed, a former client. He was CEO of a manufacturing company, and he made a transition into being the director of Historical Museum Association. Another individual, Bill, was vice president of a high-tech company, And he made a transition into an international ministry service organization. Another individual, Mitch, was a salesman for a water treatment service company, and he made a transition into an international medical support organization. So there's we kind of get this dimension here, and it doesn't mean that individuals are going from a management or executive position and transitioning into a management executive position. That sometimes does, sometimes doesn't. But it just means we've got two major cultures here, and unless a person looks before they jump, A, they're not going to be competitive, and B, they may get over their head and make a huge mistake. So we're gonna just dive into this. And Tom, you and I talked about this, and you had some excellent thoughts. So why don't you give us the first silver bullet here on what should a person be aware of when they're making this shift from for-profit to non-profit?
Well, I think the big one, John, and I mean there's a whole realm here. We talked a little bit about this, but I think the big one is realizing that you're moving from what we would call a professional environment to an environment that has much more to do with whatever the mission is of the nonprofit or the ministry, and from going from the expectations of making money and making a business profitable to actually trying to make your nonprofit either more service orientated to be able to reach whatever their mission is, if it's a ministry, to enhance that. And so it really is a change of culture and expectation that I really think a lot of times it takes people a little bit of time to get used to that, because it changes the whole way that people evaluate you, the way that you evaluate yourself and what success is in that environment, and what your expectations will be as far as how to measure all of that. So I think it's a lot of times it's very, very difficult to kind of get used to the fact that it's a little bit different. The other thought that we had that went with that, that I had as far as expectations, a lot of times they're really looking at values, your integrity, your character become a much bigger thing in this kind of an environment. Not to say that they're not in a professional environment, but it becomes even a larger thing. And so I think that's another area to be aware of, that they're going to be asking questions about. They're going to want to know who you are and how you fit with their organization. So
okay,
those are the two
so,
things that come off the top of my head right away.
Yeah. Okay, so just to continue on this, as we look at a person's day-to-day work on, you know, going to work, their 40-hour week, what would the person that's currently in the for-profit community begin to experience that's different in the nonprofit community? What are they sensing, feeling, doing, the attitude of being supervised, the relationship with their colleagues? Anything come to mind there?
Well, once again, it's in this situation, I think with nonprofits, is they're always wanting to measure everything, and we'll talk a little bit more of this later about how we're relating with this and does it really fit in how we're working well to get to a certain place. So it's, you know, the idea of working with a board in the sense of a nonprofit is very different than a board for a profit organization in the sense of they're trying to measure more how we're reaching our ministry, our goals, our targets for improving services or how we can do this, not to make a profit, but to actually succeed in reaching what we're trying to do and we're trying to advance here. And so that's a little bit of a different feel of how everything is measured.
And you had mentioned something that occasionally in the nonprofit sector, there's an expectation of 24/7 availability. Is that
correct?
Is that the case?
That is correct. That's another thought that goes along with the idea that at times, in these kind of, especially I know in ministry situations, nonprofit some, is there's an expectation that you're going to be available when there's a need. It also has this feeling of kind of being in a fishbowl where everybody's kind of watching you and watching how you act and how you behave and what you're, how you kind of handle hard situations. It's a very different thing because most of the time in business you're not measured by those things. And in this kind of an environment, all the subtleties of relating really does matter.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I was just thinking while we're talking that if a person is in a nonprofit sector, and you and I have worked in both arenas, so we have an intuitive sense of when we're in one, we act one way, when we're another, we act another, and that's this whole thing about the 24/7 and the fishbowl. It would suggest that there's a high potential of burnout, not from the pressure, which would certainly be true in the for-profit, but the burnout would be you just sometimes never get away from the job. There's always someone commenting on your family relationships, husband and wife, parenting, what went on in school. That's a large part of that work environment that's going on in the nonprofit sector. Not all organizations, but a much larger percentage than the for-profit.
That's correct. That's correct.
Yeah. So you had mentioned the term relationships. Let's go there. How would you characterize the difference in the importance of relationships with colleagues going from the marketplace for-profit sector to the nonprofit sector?
Well, some of the thoughts that I have on that is they'll sound very similar in some ways to a professional setting. I mean, some of the words I'm going to use, someone that would be listening that's in a professional setting would say, well, that's similar to what we experience. But I'm actually talking about a degree, and it's like in a nonprofit or a ministry, the ability to really work with others and to relate is at the heart of everything. And that's true in all kind of job settings, but there's something more about this when it comes to being a team member, the idea of values as far as not only what the organizational values are, but where your values fit in with that is expressed in the way that the relationships are. I just chatted with a gentleman this morning who is a senior pastor of a growing church, and they're looking for a new children's minister. And they had two.
Could you take a break, Tom, and let's pick it up right after the break?
Okay.
Okay, John, we have a short 2-minute break. Today we've been talking about job search tips, but you do a lot more for men and women who are struggling with mid-career issues.
That's right, Evan. We do. We help men and women find that career sweet spot which can give their life meaning and purpose.
Do you really think that anyone, regardless of education, present job, or a reentry homemaker with no current marketplace skills, can really believe that there is something special out there?
Yes, Evan, I believe they can find a fulfilling career and get hired to do it.
You know, John, as I've talked with you about career advancement, I've been thinking about all those thousands of mid-career adults who go back to school to earn a college degree or even an advanced graduate degree, and yet...
Well, yeah, Evan, and yet they don't get hired in their field after they finish the degree, right?
Right. Yeah, it seems so sad.
Well, there is a brighter picture that advanced education can really pay off if only the student took the time to find his or her sweet spot and then choose a degree which complements the career choice.
Boy, that really makes sense. Can we talk more about this during the next break?
Certainly.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority for discussion. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's return to our broadcast and pick up where we left off.
And we're picking up right where we left off just before the break. Our topic is making a transition in your career from the for-profit sector to the nonprofit sector. And Tom, just before the break, we were hot on the issue of how do relationships and the whole concept of relationships differ in the two areas, and you were being very clear that the words you were using sound similar to both, but there's a lot more depth on this topic of relationships. So could you give us an example or two of what might be a deeper relational cultural issue in the nonprofit sector?
Okay. And I do have two. There's the one I was starting to talk about was I had chatted with a pastor actually this morning who they're in the process of looking for a ministry person that handles children from zero all the way through high school. And they had two people come in, and both of them were highly qualified. Both had a lot of people that had recommended them. But one gentleman, the place that he was staying with was one of their key leaders. They were meeting with all these other key people, and he just did not have the ability to just be warm and to have a conversation and to let people kind of talk about what their vision for the church was. He just didn't ask questions. And the other lady was more, who was also looking, was more kind of humble, asking questions, kind of made herself open to kind of learning and exploring. And it was like it was a night and day thing for them as a group. And even though both were very qualified, there's going to be a relational element there that is so important that that's what they're going to make the whole decision on. And I've actually seen that happen in an organization that my daughter happens to work with, which is the Hemophilia Society in Colorado. And a very similar situation. The executive director there was very well qualified, but she had a really hard time just being warm to all the different families and the different people that have hemophilia. It's a very close community because of the disease. And she only lasted about a year simply because she just could not make people feel comfortable and warm and a part of this community. And she was doing her job in the sense of her job description just fine, but because the relational element was out there, she actually lost her job.
So I
think there's so much to it in a nonprofit and a ministry environment where the way you relate and your ability to connect is even more important than even in a professional environment.
Yeah. Okay, so for our listener, I think we're saying very specifically if you're going to make this transition, or you're thinking about this transition, you must identify the nature and preference and value of this relationship issue in the nonprofit sector. You got to get your arms around it. You got to understand it and embrace it. If you don't like it, you don't belong. It's got to be something that is you if you're going to make this shift. Now, you know, a thought just came to mind as an example also. You're at work in a nonprofit sector, and you find out that somebody's a family member has cancer, terminal cancer. Well, in any work environment, that certainly would be a major issue. One's going to be concerned and sympathetic. However, in the nonprofit sector, I believe that that is going to become almost as important in terms of team integrity and in terms of just job productivity, where a lot more support and deference to the person that's suffering from this, whether it's a spouse or whoever, than in the for-profit sector. You know, that's kind of your family, and you don't do that here. Now, for-profit companies that give support and attention to that are always rated as the best places to work. So we don't want to generalize across the board. But, you know, if you're in a banking environment and this comes up, it just doesn't fit the motif. You don't have a large collection of sympathetic and compassionate people. Those are some of the core values of the types of individuals that tend to congregate in a nonprofit. There's a huge amount of compassion and concern for needs and pain and suffering and on and on. So when that happens to a colleague, wow, you know, the colleague becomes a customer in a way. Yeah. Any more thoughts on that, Tom?
Well, I really just want to wholeheartedly agree with that. And it becomes a part of the job seeker to really understand whatever nonprofit or ministry is going into, what their culture is, what their philosophy of ministry, what they believe is important for you to be able to kind of get into when you're interviewing with them, where they're at, and help them understand you get them, because that's going to be the big thing, is do you get them? Not them getting you, it's you getting them. That's going to be a very big thing.
Yes. So we're kind of moving to a list of do's and don'ts here that you and I had talked about and prepared, and you've touched on the first one, and that is, if you're thinking of doing this, you do research that organization, particularly paying attention to what is the philosophy as to what are they all about, what are they trying to accomplish, because those individuals, this is deep with them. They believe this. They have sacrificed. They've gone 24/7. Maybe they have even contributed money when the organization was going through some rough spots. Maybe they've recruited their friends. Maybe they joined because a friend or a family member got sick or benefited from the inner city education program or the international rescue program and so on. So it's important to do that research and realize everyone there is cause-driven or value-driven. A second of the three to-dos is to meet, before going to an interview, meet with someone in that organization, or even before then, meet with someone in that type of organization, an education organization, inner city organization, in a church situation that's employed, and be sure that you have the job title, the job duties that you're seeking nailed down. Don't go into the situation with, well, I just want to help, or I want to be one of the team. That puts the burden on the employer to figure out, first, can you make the transition? And number two, to guess what it is that you might help with. And chances are that the job title you had in your for-profit company may not be exactly the same as in the nonprofit. And the last on this, and then, Tom, I need to give you some time to jump in. When you are preparing for this future job interview, you must go through your entire history of all your volunteer, community service, church service, projects you've done for the Y, Rotary, Kiwanis, all of that, and you need to start organizing it in terms of the contribution you made and the things you learned. What you're trying to document is, I are one. I've been there. I've experienced it, and I've been able to make a contribution. And that takes the doubt away. It takes the risk away from the employer. Tom, any comment on those three things to do?
Well, I like your last one because I think that many times they really need that to see that you, first of all, what your passion is like. Is it there? They're going to want to know, can you relate with other people that are in this kind of environment? And what have you done? You know, not that you have to do the exact thing that you're wanting to do at that place. It just has to say that what have you done? How have you put yourself in there? And I really like that thought that you had. It's very good.
Yeah. You know, an example comes to mind of a situation where, let's say, someone has been teaching in public education, and they've got 15 years experience teaching middle school. And so now they want to move into the nonprofit sector with an international organization that's teaching, and let's just pick, one of the countries in Africa. And so they're going to go to Africa to teach middle schoolers. And so here's the employer, and the employer's all excited because here's a volunteer that wants to consider that change, but this teacher arrives in this country, in Africa, and says, where's the school? And they point to the tree over there. And then says, well, where are the desks? Well, you know, you just sit on the grass. Well, where are the textbooks? There are no textbooks. Well, what about the PowerPoint? What about the overhead projector? None of that. Where's the restroom? No restrooms. And all of a sudden, it's like, ah. And so those teaching skills that were developed in the American public education system may not transfer over. And so it's important that the applicant, the person making the change, can really, really understand what it is they're pursuing and why they consider themselves to be successful in making that change. Now, this is a hypothetical situation. I use this in training a lot, but it really illustrates a very core. I mean, here's this person, all passionate. I just want to go and help and reach out to those in Africa or China or Indonesia because I keep reading about their desperate need for teachers. Well, this might just blow up in the person's face. Any thoughts on that, Tom?
Well, I think it's a great illustration of the reason why you have.
We got to take a break, Tom.
Okay.
Sorry.
We're taking a short 2-minute break to ask John Bradley some questions about pursuing an advanced degree as a strategic step to a better job. John, in our last break, you suggested that more education can be a curse as well as a blessing.
That's right, Evan. If a person chooses more education to acquire skills they don't have...
You mean innate skills they don't have?
Someone who thinks they can gain hardwiring skills through education, well, I'm sad to say that for this person, there will be limited career success.
Hmm. So give us the positive side of the coin.
Well, the good side is that by choosing wisely, that is, the right career, an advanced degree can work wonders and even help the person get hired with the employer of their choice.
Well, that sounds encouraging, and I know you have more on this subject, like how does one know if a new career is really right for them and worth all that additional education?
That's right, Evan. We can discuss that on our next break, how to know for sure.
Thanks, John. If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group. hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority for discussion. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's go back to our broadcast.
And we are back in our broadcast. Our topic today is how to make the transition from the for-profit work sector to the nonprofit. And we've been going through a list of do's and don'ts. Tom, you got cut off right before the break. You want to finish that sentence?
Well, yeah, I just wanted to kind of just affirm what you're saying as far as the need to kind of really find out what you're going into and what they're really believing and what the environment is. And a lot of times we just make that assumption that we know that. So I was just affirming what you were saying, and the illustration that you used was very, very helpful to help people understand there is a difference here that they need to kind of research and find out.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to three don'ts.
All right.
Don't limit your interview preparation to past marketplace or corporate projects and goals. Those are fine, but they're not going to make as many points as your accomplishments in your volunteer and, let's say, extracurricular clubs, association groups. You've got to brush up on those, and you've got to put them at the same level. Be ready to discuss relationships that were important to you in those volunteer and other extracurricular projects that you participated in. So have that ready. The second don't. Don't complain that the for-profit companies are too cutthroat and they don't care enough, and you've had enough of that, and now you want to go to work where somebody cares. There are some places, perhaps, that are not as kind and compassionate, but employers do not appreciate when you talk down a present or past employer. You're losing points. You might want to say it in a positive way, that you have put in your 20 years in the corporate marketplace. You've made a lot of accomplishments that you're proud of, and now it's time at this season of life to make the transition, and have some good reasons why you've chosen that particular organization. And the last don't assume that a nonprofit employer will understand that just because you were successful in the marketplace, you will also succeed in the nonprofit sector. You have to prove that, because, and this is a good frame of mind to have when you're preparing for the interview. Just assume that there someone else had made that transition and they failed, like the example, Tom, that you had of that hemophilia association, and the executive failed. And so everyone remembers that, and they all bristle at that person that used to work, and they didn't this, and they didn't that, and they came from this work environment. There's an unfortunate stereotype of military colonels. You and I are both prior military, Tom, so we know what a hard-boiled old colonel is like. And so the stereotype is, boy, you know, he's really hard to work for, he's really demanding, and makes you toe the line and salute the flag. Well, there are stereotypes like that of individuals that come from the for-profit sector into the nonprofit. And you don't know how prevalent that stereotype is. Just assume that it may be there, and be ready to give some very positive examples of how you are acclimated, how you understand, and how you enjoy that environment. Any final comments, Tom, before we turn to our job seeker questions?
No, I really appreciate what you just said, because that is so true, of making sure that people know that you understand the difference and are articulating that. It will mean the world to them that you've thought about that.
Yes. And, in one particular situation that's very current, I remember this individual who made the change, and it surprised me because he had no prior experience for the management job that he had. He ended up managing a department in the nonprofit, and it turned out that his empathy and compassion that the panel, the interviewing panel, sensed about him counted at least 50%, gave him, it was a tipping point for him, because he was up against some people that were very experienced for the position he had applied for, but they didn't get the job. So that's just another example. So, Tom, you got some job seeker questions for us.
I do. The first one here is from Elena in L.A., California. She said, I've been an executive in marketing for large companies for many years. I am thinking about starting my own consulting firm. What should I do in terms of getting future clients?
Let's just assume, because we don't know, that Elena is well-experienced in her field. She knows her trade. She has a lot of lessons learned that she can pass on. And so the real problem to solve is we have a highly experienced person, and instead of job hunting, she is client hunting. And so how to do that? And there are some similarities. Well, step one, and all those in consulting, there's sort of a chorus that all of us agree. You have to get busy right now doing a project. And most of that time, that very first or second or third project is a pro bono. And that means you, with all the contacts and relationships you have, you approach a decision maker and say, you're starting a consulting business and you would like to develop your expertise as a consultant, and you would like to propose a project that you know they need help with. And just so that the recipient of the consulting help feels like they're helping, it might be something like, if I do a good job, it would be nice if I could get a recommendation from you. And the public doesn't need to know that, I didn't charge you. So, and when you do a pro bono, this is very important, you have to put bookends around it. So you have to be when you start, when it's over, and there has to be a product, a something you do. It's a report that you prepare. It's a banquet that you help with. It's a document of some kind. It has to be a measurable, tangible something, as opposed to just meeting and talking and that kind of thing. Because if there isn't a tangible endpoint, you won't feel good about it, and they'll wonder, why did we spend all this time? Another important thing. So the key thing for someone branching in consulting is you got to be busy. And if you don't have paying customers, then you need to go out and invent some customers on a pro bono basis and just get busy. And being busy creates buzz. So friends are saying, so how's it going? Well, I'm doing this project for so-and-so and so-and-so. Oh, boy, it sounds like you're really busy. And that gives friends and acquaintances and former coworkers something positive to say about you. The very, very best source of future clients are going to be one's prior colleagues and prior employers, especially those that highly esteemed your work. And so Elena needs to go get a Starbucks or lunch or breakfast, something, and there should be at least 5, hopefully 10 different individuals over the last several years that have a very positive impression of the quality of Elena, and you sit down with them face-to-face. It's a good 30-minute-plus meeting, and you say, this is what I'm doing. Do you know some people that I could contact where I can share with them what I'm doing? Your best, absolute best sources of new customers, new clients, are going to be people you already know. I feel that one is wasting their time to do cold calling. There are way, way, way too many, quote, consultants out there. Consultants are hired because they're trusted, and trusted means either the person paying, requesting the service knows the individual or knows somebody that knows the individual. This is why a lot of consultants will hover at the Chamber of Commerce and Lions Club, Rotary Club, and so on. What are they doing? They are becoming known and familiar so that when a person has a need, they'll just call Bill or they'll call Gail. And that's the whole thing. It's all about relationships, which is also true in the job hunt. So those would be the two major things I would say, Tom. And this depends on whether a person, kind of their age and their expertise, but an excellent, excellent source of referrals is going back and taking a high-end class, it doesn't have to be for credit, at a local school, and getting referrals from the prof and from alumni that have taken that class and the current students in the class. That is another excellent, excellent way. You should be able to get 5 to 10 referrals by taking a 1 to 2 unit class that is at the graduate level, so that it applies to 20 years of consulting or something. So, Tom, any comments on that before we go on to the next job seeker question?
No, that was very good. Very good. The next question I have here is from a gentleman named Ron in West Lynn. He says, my company is downsizing and I may lose my job. I do shipping and receiving for a restaurant equipment company. I'm getting married for the first time at 41. Should I look at a new career?
Ooh, a lot of changes here. I know you do marriage and family counseling, Tom,
mm-hmm.
So yeah, the wheels are going in your mind. So let me just take a quick shot at it, and then you take a shot. Whoops, we got the break. We'll pick this up after the break. This is going to be fun.
Great.
We're taking a short 2-minute break at the final quarter of our show to ask John Bradley about the wisdom of pursuing an advanced degree as a strategic step to a better job. John, in our last break, you left us hanging with the statement that we could know the right career for sure, for sure. Those were your very words, that we could know if a future career direction is right and worth any investment of more education.
Right, Evan. Those were my very words. You can know the right career for sure, for sure.
Okay, so how does one know?
Well, let's think about house hunting. You are meeting with a realtor and asking that person to help you find the ideal home that has, say, 3 bedrooms, a good neighborhood, and so on. The realtor does a computer search and finds 5 houses for sale which fit your preferences.
Okay, I'm with you so far.
Well, here you have the pictures, and on the computer you can take a virtual tour of each house. Are you ready to make a decision to buy that one?
Well, no, I'm not ready. Virtual reality is good for a start, but I need something more tangible. I mean, I want to see the house. I want to walk in the rooms, look at the backyard.
You mean you want to walk through the house before you buy it, right?
Right.
Well, that is the same approach to selecting your ideal career. You want to meet the person who has your job.
You mean meet face-to-face?
Yes, face-to-face at the job site, not over coffee. To make a confident decision, you need to see, feel, touch, taste, hear, smell, talk, and finally dream. Then you will know for sure, for sure.
So where are you going to find that person? I don't know all the people employed out there in 50 states.
Well, Evan, because this step of career validation is so important, our mid-career advancement services provide that link for our clients to find that person in their city who represents each recommended career.
So the hopeful career seeker can know for sure, for sure.
Yes, he and she can know for sure, for sure.
Well, John, this has been a most interesting journey. I want to encourage any of you who are feeling the stress of a dead-end job to go to our website, www.idacgroup.com, and make contact with one of our preferred counselors. Each of these seasoned men and women are professionals at helping you discover your wiring. You will see the reference preferred counselors at the top of our toolbar. John, we still have the last quarter of your show. Let's return.
Let's do it.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. And now, John, let's return to the final quarter of our show.
And we are in our final quarter of our show, focusing on how to make the transition from the for-profit to the nonprofit sector, and we've really packed in a lot of good words for advice. My broadcast guest today is Tom Board from Denver, Colorado. Tom is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website. And Tom, we were actually talking about the job seeker questions, and Ron, whose question you read, is thinking about a career change. He's about to get married, and we were just right in the middle there. You were making some comments, so let's go back to that.
Well, as you were saying, there's actually two issues here, and we were kind of chuckling because we know about this when it comes to relationships. Is one part of this is what to do as far as career. The other part is the relationship, obviously, and, you know, from being a counselor, I would say that one of the things that would feel really important to me in talking with Ron is just where his fiance, as far as he's beginning to kind of consider this, what's the situation of their relationship and how she feels about this in the sense of beginning to kind of go a step farther, kind of will this be something that would really affect them as a couple, and making sure that she would feel very good with him beginning to explore other options. So that'd be my first thought on that.
Yes. And, you know, one's marriage is hopefully going to last a lifetime, and the job, who knows how long that's going to last.
Right.
So I'm a little concerned that Ron is considering two huge issues here, and doing both simultaneously may not be a wise move. So my suggestion would be is to take the heat off and focus on the marriage for at least a year. And as far as income, get an income survival job. Get something that pays the bills and not go through all the steps and all the important things that are necessary to choose a new career. So get the very best job you can that pays the best and has stable hours. Another thing we don't want in a new marriage is erratic hours, 24/10 or 4/10s or the swing shift or something of that nature. So we want a stable paycheck, solid hours. We want job duties that are not stressful, but we don't need at this time something that has meaning, purpose, value, is going to get you to jump out of bed in the morning. We can postpone that until after the first year of marriage. And then, with all that established, you have a relational foundation, And now it's time to start thinking about, okay, where do I want to go with our, both husband and wife's, work life? How do we want to see this? Okay, Tom, let's go to the next job seeker question.
All right, from Jerry in Port City, Washington. He says, I have been in a port executive director. I was hired to clean up some problems of the previous administration. Having straightened things out, I have burned some bridges. I also have cast doubt on my integrity with my network of professional contacts. I'm afraid that I will not get a good referral when I apply for new jobs. How do I get around this?
Ooh, okay. Well, you know, this happens. This one sounds, you know, sometimes when people share these kind of things, you're just getting the tip of the iceberg.
Right.
But the tip that we're seeing, you know, it's got some blood on it. I guess I would start on this helping the individual. His name is Jerry?
Yes, his name is Jerry.
Jerry, I would start with saying or beginning to prepare a story to say something like, all of us that have been employed for at least 20 years have situations that we wish in our past had not been so. And for whatever reason, whoever's fault, it just didn't work out the way everybody wanted. And unfortunately, in my last situation, just most recent one, I experienced one of those. It unfortunately was, there were a lot of feelings hurt and emotions bruised, and I'm afraid that I know I can get some good references, but if you, employer, were to talk to some of the senior individuals, I'm afraid that how they see the situation and how I saw the situation is not the same. And unless it's really essential, you, employer, know all the details, it would probably be better if we talked about a more pleasant prior work experience that I had where I felt that I made a great contribution and the contribution was supported by other individuals, got some great recommendations here. Could we go to that first, and then perhaps you may have some specific questions, you know, about my last. So that would be one. The second thing that is equally important is Jerry has to establish a track record. Ever since I was this high, I have been working at da-da-da-da-da. And there has to be, I would say, three major topics of work accomplishments and work achievements that begin to give a pattern. Every time we turn around, wherever Jerry works, he has a positive track record of. And so we need three purpose statements of things that Jerry has done well in most every job, saved money, met the budget, got things done ahead of time, exceeded goals and expectations, received accommodations and awards. That's what I'm talking about. And then most employers use a very popular system, a very good system called behavioral interviewing. And the heart of behavioral interviewing is give me examples. So when Jerry is talking about, well, I worked for company XYZ for 4, 5, 6 years, they want examples of how in that company you pursued this theme of getting things done ahead of time and saving money and so on. Give me three examples. And so three is a magic number. So it would be important for Jerry to organize his past in that way. Now, here's something not to do for Jerry, given what we've heard. Jerry is already on the defense. He's feeling wounded. And so the tendency is going to be that Jerry is going to lead the interviewer to what he's being defensive about that he doesn't want to talk about. It's funny how we do that. So Jerry has to rehearse a proactive statement like the one I mentioned, have that down pat, record it into some recording device, play it back, listen to it, revise it, and be comfortable. Hey, if this comes up, I can handle it. Then he's not playing defense anymore. If he is afraid or sensitive or he thinks somebody's going to throw him a curveball on that particular issue, then he's shot himself in the foot. It's over, because they will notice his facial expressions of, I'm hiding something, or I hope you don't ask me, or some avoidance issue, and that's where we need to go with Jerry. Now, any comments before we go to another one, Tom?
No, that was really good, John. That's really good. Last one we have here for our time, I think, is Ed in North Carolina. It says, I'm a licensed mechanical engineer. I feel like a square peg in a round hole. If I could do it all over again, I would teach high school and coach sports, but there's not enough money doing that. How do I use
And we've run out of time, Tom. We'll have to
do
that later.
Seeker broadcast.
All right.
Our host has been job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John is president and founder of the IDAC Group. He's been helping mid-career men and women find their sweet spot since 1973. John has authored 4 career advancement books. He led the development team for the premier IDAC Career Match instrument, which has assisted over 30,000 career seekers nationwide. John has personally trained over 600 counselors, college professors, and consultants in career advancement and job search. And he's personally selected 12 of these 600 whom he highlights on his website. These men and women are independent practitioners whom John has personally trained. They're not employees nor affiliated with the IDAC Group, and they've not been paid any fee to be featured. They are good, honest professionals who have gained John's approval over many years of successful practice. I'm Evan Newman, and I invite you to join us next week at this same time for our next live broadcast. Say, do you know someone who is frustrated in their job search? Why not send them a tweet, email, or a Facebook note about our free broadcast? Maybe your friend can learn something which will land them that next job. We invite you to participate in our broadcast by sending your job search questions during our live broadcast. Those questions received during the live broadcast will receive John's priority attention. Thanks for listening, best wishes, and may God bless you in your job search.